Hey, everybody, and welcome to Healthy Discourse. It's Emily here, and I'm very excited to welcome back to the show my friend and sleep consultant for little ones, Jessica Bryant. Hey, Jessica.
Hi, Emily. It's so exciting. I'm happy to
I
be
know.
here.
I didn't think that I was going to be asking you these questions last time we talked. So,
isn't that thing about life?
Isn't that funny? Yes, having a baby again to consider sleep habits for was not on my radar, but it sure is now. So anyway, welcome back to the show, Jessica. And for those of you who did not listen to our first episode we recorded, it's been quite a while. I'm going to link to that in the show notes so that we can think about prioritizing sleep for parents too. I really loved our topic last time. And today, this is for the parents of babies and little ones to lean into because there is so much information out there and so much pressure, I would say, about babies and sleep. And here's one thing about having a baby at 41. You don't listen to all of the quote experts, and I'm not negating sleep consultant experts, don't get me wrong, but all of these things that I feel like when my oldest son especially was born, he's 11 now, it was like, you've got to do it this way or else you're doing it wrong. And I feel like there's so much room and flexibility for each family within what our unique needs are in different seasons of life. There are baby people having their first babies that might be listening to this, and there are people like me that are on number five. And I think those priorities are quite different. And Jessica has tips for all of us. So,
yes.
Am I right?
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I really think it's important for families to be able to parent the way they feel led to parent. And I think sleep is a big piece of that because so often we're so exhausted and we're so frustrated that we find ourselves parenting in ways we never wanted to in our own energy to show up as the mom we want to be. And I think we forget sometimes that instead of worrying about all these other things we have to expose our children to, if we just stepped back and really looked at some basics in that sleep, that we can set those intentional things at home to be a well-rested family. And then we have a much easier time parenting.
Yes. And I love how you talk about that being a well-rested family. It's not just the baby. It's not just the kids. It's not just the parents. It's all of us. It matters for everyone because everyone affects the other. So
yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, so I'm going to give a quick little personal story and then we'll dig into it. So when my oldest was born, he's 11 now, as I mentioned, it was nearly against the law to co-sleep with your baby because there was all of this scary information out there about SIDS and rolling on babies and all of this kind of thing. And I'm not saying that those things aren't possible and don't happen. I have my own thoughts on SIDS, but we're not going to dive deeply into that today. As I was realizing, every mom I've ever talked to in my 11 years of parenting has spent at least some level of time with their baby with them in their bed, whatever that looks like. And I feel like we are afraid to talk about it. And so I'm grateful that over the last few years, especially during my pregnancy with Naomi, I started reading about the 7 C's of safe co-sleeping. And I started reading about all of these moms who were re-embracing co-sleeping and how well rested they were, how their babies were sleeping better and so forth. And so about night, actually, even the first night with her, we embraced that. I followed very closely the 7 C's of safe co-sleeping, and I can link to what those are as well. And obviously, that's, again, not for everyone. You have to know yourself. You have to know your partner. You have to know your room situation, all the things. But for us, it has been a dream because in this phase of life, I don't have time to be tired. I don't have time to be unrested. And I made myself crazy with my second biological son and his lack of sleep and spending half my night in the rocking chair in his room trying to get him back to sleep. And so I just made the commitment to try it. And I just wish I had done it sooner for myself more than them even, because our baby is a great nighttime sleeper. She's now transitioned to sleeping anywhere between 6 and 9 hours in her crib every night. And then I generally will bring her in with me. She's fallen into a consistent bedtime. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, this is so much easier than I needed before. So that's, again, just my personal experience. But I think it just goes to show, again, that there's not a one right way. And it's okay to try different things and not just necessarily follow all the rules or the most popular books or whatever that might be. And I would love, Jessica, for you to talk to us a little bit more about how these transitions happen, you know, the early days and weeks of being of babies and so forth. And then I want to make sure to mention that we have a free resource that for parents that would like a download of some of this to be able to have. That's from you and your website, and you send out really great emails too. So just a plug for that as well. But I just kind of told my own personal story from this right now season, and I would just love to better understand your perspective, your tips, what you see working for families in these early days of infancy that can be so overwhelming when it comes to sleep.
Yes. Yes. And I love what you have said.
Sorry. Like, that was a lot.
Yes. I want to make sure that I've answered your questions, but I really think that you reflecting and being intentional, and in your season of life, you have a lot of reflection when it's your fifth child and the different personalities. And then also, you know, knowing yourself as a parent, since you've been a parent and for 11 years. And so, yes, I love hearing that there are multiple ways. There's no right way to do it. And to really, when you first have a baby, try your hardest. And I really do feel like it's very different for parents today in versus me in 2003 when I became a mom, but really trusting yourself in terms of what feels good and what you believe. You know, I think it's so easy to just be like, oh, well, that sounds like a great idea. Or that person that I'm listening to says that's the only way to do it, you know? I hear from moms all the time that, Jessica, is there something wrong with me? Because I don't want to co-sleep and I don't want to be up every hour nursing and I don't find joy at 2 a.m., you know? Whereas at the same time, I do find a parent who's like, this is my last baby and I'm fine with that. Or so really focusing on first yourself and what feels good. And yes, you can try different things, but I do suggest being intentional about it. So what I find is there's a few things that aren't really communicated in the newborn stage, because I mean, there's so many things, right? So,
there's so many things. And you know what? We forget them. I told my doula, I was like, I need you to tell me what book I need to read because I don't remember anything. And she assured me, she was like, Emily, you don't need to read any books. It will all come back. You're fine. Mm-hmm. And of course she's right. But in the preparation, I was petrified. You're right. Because there's so many things, no matter how many times you do it, I feel.
Right. So I think sometimes, especially for families that maybe aren't around babies, maybe they're holding their first baby for the first time, we don't know a lot about what the expectations are. So if we are co-sleeping and it's working, and maybe we're working on transitioning, or even before that, let me take a step back. One of the first things that I think you should do when you have a new baby is learn the difference between their hunger cue and their sleep cue.
Good. Yes. And it's so unique for each baby, right?
It's so unique. It's hard. Like, let's not say that this is easy. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Because what I find is there are families that don't know the answer to that. And fast forward, baby is 8 months old and they'll be on a call with me. And that's one of my first questions. So what is your baby's sleepy cue?
And
they don't know, because they either assume that every cry is a hunger cry, so they're nursing or feeding, or they think every cry is always a distress, you know, means something.
Right.
And so I think that's our first thing to learn is communication with your baby. So I don't know if you can share your thoughts on what that looked like with Naomi.
And I will say, even now, the difference between boys and girls, this is my first girl, obviously, but they're just so different, or at least mine are. So she is not a big like screamer, throw a fit, unless she's extremely tired, which often does come with extreme hunger too for her. So, but she tends to do this when she's hungry. She tends to moan like an M sound. Now she's 5.5 months old. When she's tired, she tends to just be a little bit more, I don't know, just a little bit more all over the place with the way that the sounds that she's making, she flails a little bit more kind of thing. That's more when she's tired, and she does rub her eyes now too, yawns, you know, those types of things. But I do find that, and the other thing she does when she's hungry, she'll kind of do this little huffing sound. Like, I can't wait anymore. It's like a dog panting kind of. But it's very cute. So those, I would say, are her little cues that I've been able to read so far. And obviously she's changing a lot because we're at this 5.5 month mark and it's like a different baby every day. So
those are great examples, because those are the more subtle things that parents don't often know to look for. That flailing, that uncoordinated movements, you know, the staring off to space, the glazed over eyes, sometimes scratching its skin, pulling
red its around skin. The rims. Their eyes get a little red around the rims. I forgot that one.
And then knowing their hunger cues, and, you know, when you're feeding on demand and sleeping on demand in the beginning, that's why these things are confusing, you know? And
It's very hard early.
And you have to make mistakes. You know, I've had parents before, "No, Jessica, just tell me, I don't want to make a mistake." And I said,
"Oh boy. Yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome to parenthood, right?"
Right. Lots of mistakes.
Yeah.
Learning on the job.
Yeah. Always, forever. In fact, I learned a big lesson this morning with my two big boys. So there we go.
Right.
Yeah.
None of us are experts, and you think every parent has it figured out, and none of us do. So.
Right. Very well said.
Yes.
Yeah.
So being in that communication, starting to pinpoint, when is your baby really hungry? When are you hearing the M's and the ahs? And when is your baby sleeping? So that every sleep is not tied to a hunger, you know? And so you can have those times where you have non-feeding calming routines and things like that. The other thing, I think, is understanding development for your child's, you know, week, or if they're over outside the newborn stage, you know, what is developmentally a typical awake time for their brain? And what is that range for their age? And definitely that's something, you know, you can reach out to me if you have questions about. For babies 4 months and up, I do have, like Emily mentioned, a sleep milestone guide on my website that you can download, that are sleep milestones from age 4 months to 6 years.
Ooh.
And it's not to say that it's a guide, it's a place to start, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a, you know, whether in the newborn stage, you know, maybe you're between 30 minutes and 45 minutes. And if you have that guide, you can have an easier time watching your child to see when their sleepy cues start and what their unique needs, because that's the hard part, is what are the sleep needs of your child? They're most likely different than your other child, you know,
right? Well, and back to Naomi, here's one thing that we've, like, she has fallen into, as I mentioned at the beginning, a great nighttime pattern. Like, she's very predictable, but she's a very spotty napper still. We're still struggling with, outside of her first morning nap, just getting her to stay asleep. And of course, when you're in a busy family with five kids, it's very hard to stop everything. And she still very much loves contact napping. That's by far our best way. And which is fine sometimes, but we can't do that all the time. And so we're still working toward what does that look like for her. But what I realized is if we set up these patterns, which you might be about to talk about, but if we work on understanding their patterns and try to fit in with them as best as we can, then oftentimes they'll fall into a more structured routine on their own versus us trying to force something that's not working. But that's just been my experience. So that's why I'm not stressing still about her napping.
Right. It's working for your family, but you're starting to see little pieces that you're kind of like, this is not sustainable. And probably also thinking ahead to kind of development, it gets a little harder between 7 to 12 months just because they're more aware and they start, you know, picking up on their favorite patterns and things like that. So, and she's right at the stage where naps become more predictable and more regular. I had a client the other day who had just taken in a foster baby, you know, so immediate life change, right?
Oh yeah. Done that before. Wow.
Right. And first child.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And she was really struggling with, you know, the stepping back and starting with the baby's needs. And I hear that all the time from parents. Well, I don't want to be tied to a schedule, or I don't want to do this. And I try really hard to explain, if you could just give me like 3 or 4 days and almost like do a study on your baby to see the sleep science that they need. Once you understand that and you see that they are predictable and well-rested and in better moods and feeds go better and going down for nap is quicker and they sleep longer, you're going to see what the easier piece is, you know,
and then
reroute your needs. So it's kind of that, you know, for sure. When I was about to say, it's really hard to watch for sleepy cues when you're trying to get 4 other kids fed, bathed, and in bed and have multiple conversations and interruptions.
Yeah.
End of the day. So
it is hard.
It is tricky. And so sometimes your 11-year-old might be great at reading her check engine light, you know, or other, you know, dads or things like that that can help with, you know, what is the communication? What is your, is your baby saying? So when families, maybe like you were saying, are, we've been co-sleeping and we're ready to kind of start transitioning to independent sleeping and moving to the crib and building that confidence, I always start with mindset, you know, making sure that you believe your baby can do it. Because sometimes you can start doing it, but you actually believe she needs you, you know? And so that kind of is a derails you in the process because it keeps you second guessing. So checking your mindset, believing in your baby and understanding, you know, that they can sleep in connect cycles. They can sleep well in a crib. And are you ready for that? And then second, like I mentioned, is being in communication with your baby, having notes on when they're sleepy, when they're hungry, what it looks like, and then understanding the typical awake times for their age, so that you know what their brain needs. You know, they can only be awake so long, right? So you wouldn't just be like, okay, today, Naomi, I really need you to sleep in the crib. So you've been awake for, 3 hours. And so I'm going to go put you down in the crib and I'm going to see you later, you know, because that's just what works today. We're not going to do that, right? That is a 10 to 12 month old awake time. We're not going to do that to a baby, a 5-month-old who's learning something new. We're going to set them up for success.
Yeah.
So the last piece is understanding what a baby needs from you to learn the new pattern.
That's good.
Because I think some parents think that, oh, we're just going to do it once and it's going to work.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll tell you back with what we did. So we started, this time postpartum, I created a little oasis in my room and we stayed there for, a good while. And I spent probably the first month, not that I was always in the room, but that was like my little postpartum spot. And I really appreciated that. It simplified life a lot. Mm-hmm. And I had some great advice from people that have been through this more recently than me. Mm-hmm. With my little cart, and we had the bassinet mm-hmm. there and my little chair with all the light and so forth, which really helped. Mm-hmm. And then, for the first couple of months, I studied her like you're saying. And mm-hmm. then we tried to start putting her in her crib for naps, mm-hmm. a couple times a day, and with somewhat limited success. And then as she was falling into more typical fall asleep patterns at night is when I started trying at least to put her down in her crib. And that the first, I don't know how long it was, but the first little while, it was maybe an hour or two that she would stay in there. And that was fine. I'd go get her and bring her in with me because I sleep great with her beside me and we sideline nurse. And, it's not an all night thing anymore for sure, but that's what we kind of has worked for us because we both sleep, which is great. And then we slowly, she's just expanded that. So now she's doing up to 8-9 hours some mm-hmm. nights. Going down at about 8, and then she wakes up, anytime between 2 and 5 usually. Mm-hmm. So, which is great. I feel like that's a great stretch for a 5-month-old. And so, mm-hmm. And it's like you said, it's really just parenting though, right? We're committed to the long run and knowing that they will eventually get there and believing they will, like you said, rather than just getting so overwhelmed and just wanting to give up and just quit all of it and do whatever feels easiest in the moment. And sometimes maybe we have to do that, but if we can work toward those patterns and rhythms, it seems to ultimately be the less stressful and the lesser stress and more successful.
Yes. And there's definitely different personalities of babies that are going to fall in rhythms easier. And then there are other high sensory babies that don't. So mm-hmm. absolutely. Naomi's got that developmentally appropriate long stretch, of from bedtime to 2-3 a.m. So that is great for her brain that she's connecting all those cycles. You also said, and this is a piece that I think is left out of a lot of co-sleeping notes, and I could be wrong here, but is mom sleeping well and is dad sleeping well?
Because absolutely.
if mom is sleeping after the newborn stage, if uh-huh. you're going month after month of you're not even getting a 5-hour stretch of connected uh-huh. sleep, your uh-huh. brain, it's taking a toll, massive toll on your brain.
Yeah.
And so you feeling like you have to sacrifice your well-being for the co-sleeping is something to reflect on because that's not healthy for your baby.
Well, and I think I did the opposite with our other kids. I was so wired to think that that was so bad and wrong that I felt bad bringing them into the room so we could sleep well. And I spent hours and hours in a rocking chair feeling like I was losing my mind. And so that was kind of the opposite for me mm-hmm. with the other boys. So, feeling like, oh, you're not allowed to do this because it's wrong. But I really studied this time, okay, this safe co-sleeping thing and kind of mm-hmm. practiced it. Okay, this is the position. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, this is fairly comfortable besides that my arm goes to sleep sometimes. But I figured that out too. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is so wonderful.
That's so
for me, again, like for me versus mm-hmm. spending hours in a rocking chair or whatever else that might be. So
right. And definitely, I mean, rocking chair is the same thing as co-sleeping, basically. You're still and so just having to get up over and over again. So I'm so glad that you have found something that feels so good to you. And yes, the next step is, you know, is she's having that 3 a.m. feed, you know, generally that's a snack feed. And then if she's going back to sleep for you and then waking up anytime after 6 a.m., you know, when you're ready, the next step would be, and you may be already doing this because you have older kids, but it's like getting up out of bed, turning on lights and feeding in the loud space. Making a note of how hungry she is at that feed. Is that a great feed where she's draining you? Awesome. Because versus the 3 a.m. feed, which if that's when she's draining you, we want to kind of shift that to a snack and then have that first morning feed as your high calorie to kind of set the pace for the day. And then that sets you on the next step for when she's ready to kind of naturally drop that 3 a.m. feed. It's much
easier. And I think that's where we are right now is, yeah, she eats a ton then, and then she's, you know, later on, she's not super hungry until a little bit later in the morning, then would be ideal. But since we've just recently fallen into this pattern, I'm like, you know what? It's fine. We're here for this little bit of time.
Right.
Trying to rush things is not, has never worked well for me in the past. So we're just going to take our time. And I'm really good right now with how things are. And so again, it's kind of like, okay, we'll get there and we'll focus on that next.
When you're good, you're good. But when a mom feels that frustration coming in.
And it does happen because eventually you're like, okay, you're getting older. Like it's time to shift this a little bit more. Like, so it's happened to me already. That's how we started doing the other things, the napping in the crib and the bedtime. Right. So you just are like, okay. But I think that's that mom's intuition and, you know, to that it's okay. Like you really are the expert of your child and you know yourself and that's, and you get to be that. So, and we need resources like you, you know, to help us figure these things out for sure. But I think sometimes we negate our own intuition and gifting that God has given us. And it, because we feel like we have to trust X, Y, and Z expert on the internet when we really need someone like you that can help us invest in our own situation is what I found works better. So
yes, absolutely. And that's definitely where I start. And I don't want to leave the listeners without a full explanation because I think this is really critical.
Yes.
Is the last piece of understanding how babies learn, babies need to see a pattern repeated. So if you have created a plan and you are moving towards, you know, for example, independent sleep, then you need to remember that a baby needs to see you, mom or dad, repeat the same pattern every night. This is especially for kids who are high sensory and things like that. You know, whether it's going to take 3 nights or whether it's going to take 5 or 7 is, you know, it happens a lot faster than parents think in their head. But
yeah,
a lot of times you do the first night and it's uncomfortable, right? Because you're both doing something new. And so then you start the self-doubt and then you start the Googling and then, well, she said this and she said that. And then you change your pattern the next night.
Right.
And the baby's more upset. And then you do it again. And third night, something different. Baby is confused and questioning and looking to you because they don't understand the new boundary and they can't see a pattern.
That's great. So, and I think we also can overcomplicate this. Like it doesn't need to be 20 steps, right?
No.
Like for us, and I used to think that. So that's what I'm thinking about. It had to be a bath and this and that and the other. And we're lucky if that baby gets a bath once a week these days. So, but we do that, you know, we will lower the lights, put on PJs, put on the sleep sack. I'll sing a special little song. I'll take her in. We start to lay down. I pray for her. And sometimes we listen to lullabies, but most of the time we don't because I just don't think about it. And that's like, that's it. It's not anything huge. It's, and it's not long. I don't think it, for most babies, I don't think it has to be super long to start that transition. And, you know, we're sometimes I'll see these things on Instagram of like, it's like 25 things that takes 2 hours. I'm like, I don't know who has time for that, but I certainly don't. So,
right.
But I think those simple little steps, and by the time we're in her room that's dark and we're sitting down doing that last step, she's knows what we're doing now. And that's, you know, we've only been doing this for maybe a month or so. I think we started when she was about 4 months moving in this direction. So, but yeah, I used to think you had to do all the things. It's like, no, you don't have to do all the things.
It's hard to figure out. It's overwhelming. There's so much information. How do you know? It's your first time, right? Right.
And it's like finding that balance about what is your baby like in that sleep routine, but also what do you like? Cause you're the one that has to do it. So if it's,
pains you to get joy to you.
Yeah, I don't want to give her a bath at 7:45 every night. Like I am feeling relatively done by then. Like that's not doing that. So anyway, but I think again, we were like, oh, well, this is what you're supposed to do. And it's like, no, what do you enjoy and what works for your baby? Right.
Absolutely. So. A comforting end to the day that's sustainable, that works with your family. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be in your room for 2 hours every night, and because you have 4 other children and a partner,
you know? Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. So it's, and that's been, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's kind of been one of my priorities with when to put her down to bed. I'm so glad you mentioned that. That was like, when I think about what is the best time, what can we work toward? It's not perfect, but we've actually kind of gotten there. That 7:30 to 8 time is perfect because we have like a wind down time and my husband is able to do that with them. And then I do read aloud with them. We've been doing the Little Britches series, which I love. And I'm like, after I get her down, then I'm still able to read to them before bed, which has been wonderful because in those early times when she really was nursing for like 3 hours, you know, when she's a month old, that's what they do. It was like the never ending, you know, whatever you call that phase. I don't know.
Hard.
Yeah. Hard. Like I was nursing from 7 to 10 every night and I was like, I'm missing the nighttime routine. So having that as a priority and shifting and getting her to that place. And it's, and you know, and this is a season 2, she might decide she hates that sooner than later, but for now it's working really well for us. And I'm able to participate in that with them and it's just worked fairly well. So
it helps them with their transition. And then also to your work, you know, you prioritize your time with your husband as well. And I think that's a big piece that gets lost when you're a new parent, you know, that really, it falls to the bottom. And that's one of the most important things that you can maintain to do for your children. So I love that what you guys
I agree fully. And that's a whole nother episode, but
yes,
early on, I mean, I was like, I've actually nursed her a lot more than I nurse my boys because she just likes it more and she's a great nurser and they just weren't. But I'm like, well, somebody else needs to be able to feed this baby because I need to eventually be able to be away from her some and especially get her to sleep at night. And so that was something we worked toward early on. And I love that night once a week when I don't have to put all the people to bed, including the sweet baby that I love so much. So
yes, you're looking
that
at the
respite is, that respite is wonderful. And it's so important for ourselves and definitely for our marriages. Yeah, but that's a whole, we could talk about that for 2 hours, but
yes,
but I think it's important to remind new moms, especially you are not being a bad baby mom when you take time out to prioritize your spouse. And ultimately we can like it or not, but I think that's so important. And men need that type of reassurance that they still matter that much to you, just like we need the assurance from them that they still love us and are attracted to us and all the things, even though we're going through this crazy transition. We need that, and I think we recognize that, but they also need us. And so it's important to look at that both ways. And that's kind of unpopular in our culture, but I think that's just the truth. So
I 1000% agree. And definitely that's really why I started Sleep Happy is because I wanted women to know that, you know, that they were important. Their relationships were crucial for their children and everything did not have to revolve around them sacrificing their lives for their children, because it doesn't do anyone any good. But our culture kind of sends that message to make it us feel like it's all on our shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for sharing. You're such a breath of fresh air and helping us. And I encourage everyone to reach out to Jessica with your unique sleep challenges. She's such a great resource. And I love that you meet people where they are and walk alongside them instead of giving them a checklist to follow that this is the right way. And that's what I feel like we need when it comes to most things in parenting. So thank you again. And I'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
You are so welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Emily.
Take care.
Bye-bye.